Hello everyone, welcome to the Microsoft Virtual Academy series ITIL for IT professionals. My name is Nathan Lesnowski. I'm director and architect at Concurrency, and we're going to be talking today about change and release management. So what is change and release management? What does it do for us as IT professionals? Well, change management and release management, their principal job is to provide launch control. So if we are launching a rocket into outer space, we've spent a lot of time determining what our goal is. We've determined that we want to be able to get this rocket into outer space. We want to be able to get to the moon, or we want to be able to launch the satellite once the rocket gets there. And we've organized that vision. And then we've planned for that vision. We've built and designed a rocket that allows for us to get into outer space. What change management is about and what release management is about is it facilitates this capability for us to perform the launch control function, for us to say, are we go for launch? Are we not ready to go for launch? Are we organized to be successful, or are we not organized to be successful? Change management, in many ways, provides us with our pre-flight checklist action to look at some of the activities that we performed before in our ITIL processes, and allows us then to take that checklist and move forward through risk management and into production. So we know what we want to launch, we know what we've designed to launch, and now it's really all about how do we launch in a way which limits that risk and maximizes the benefit to our customers. So when we're organizing change management, we're going to organize processes that allow for us to be successful with change management, and we're going to organize our tool to be able to match those processes. What you don't do is you don't build out a tool set until you've organized the processes. You fix and organize your processes first, so when you build out a tool set, it aligns with what you want it to look like. It aligns with how you want it to function. All right, so let's talk about how we organize change management. Well, change management isn't simply a one-door situation. We don't send every single change through the exact same approvals. The reason why is because they're not all suited for the same types of actions. So if I have a release of a new application, let's use our example of a customer ordering application. If I have a release of a new application that's coming out, I'm going to organize a change window into which that release is going to occur. The change window is probably going to be something called a normal change. A normal change is our typical gated process that includes a CAB. What's a CAB? A CAB is a change advisory board. The idea behind the normal change process is to take the change that's coming out of this deployment of this major application or perhaps a major service pack, and I'm going to then go through this gated process that includes my change advisory board to ensure that when it gets deployed, it goes through the appropriate steps. The normal change process typically includes things like a pre-change advisory board review by the primary owner. It includes the CAB meeting itself. It includes the implementation steps. And oftentimes, it even includes a post-implementation review. This normal change process is used for the majority of changes because most changes are impacting an existing production system. And we think about how we're serving our customers. If we were to use serving our customers as our focus, as we talk about change management, the idea is that our customers are much more interested in using the application that we've given them and having continuous functional uptime with the application that we're giving them than simply just the new feature. The new feature is important to them, but if the application doesn't work, the new feature is meaningless. So for us, when we're deploying a new feature or we're deploying an application for them to use and use the first time, that experience of pushing out that modification and having careful segmented steps for it to go through as it gets pushed into production and maximizing my user's experience is really important. So the normal change process is the best place for that to happen because we facilitate then a gated process for each of those changes to flow through. So before that change goes into production, we're going to be making sure that it goes through a testing process. It's tested in QA. The user's tested in QA. It works properly. Their user experience works properly. We're pushing it out during a change window, not outside the change window. We're getting the primary owner approval to know that this change is appropriate. We're going through the CAD meeting to make sure that we don't have collisions. We're pushing out and then we're reviewing our implementation to see how it went. That normal change process does introduce steps into our deployment. And it's interesting because when I think about how a typical IT guy works, hey, if I think about how I work, if something's broken or somebody's complaining about something, I typically want to fix it right away. Oftentimes, I will even say I'll fix it during the middle of the day. I'll be sitting with a customer and they'll say, you know, it's 12 o'clock, most people are at lunch, why don't you just push out the change now? And I say to them, are you okay with this application being down for the remainder of the day? Because that's what change management really thinks about. Change management thinks about the worst case scenario, not the best case scenario. When I think about the best case scenario, that's when I start to cause outages that I didn't plan for. So when they say, okay, how long will it take to apply? Well, you know, in a best case scenario, it might take me 15 minutes to reset IIS and get the SharePoint site spun up again and have good performance, right? But what happens when I reset IIS and all of a sudden the site doesn't load and I'm trying to fix it for the rest of the day? That seriously hurt my application's performance. It seriously hurt its reputation in the business. So when I'm thinking about my change process, the reason why this normal gated process exists is because it facilitates me having the best possible experience I can give my users with my existing application, and then introducing change in a structured way. So if most of my changes are flowing through that process, that makes sense. But what if it's a change that I've done 100 times with no negative impact? If I'm pushing out that change that I've done 100 times with no negative impact, going through a normal gated process with a change advisory board review probably isn't going to be very efficient. And it's actually going to slow down my ability to introduce change that doesn't have a risk. So for example, what if modifying text on a report has been proven to never have a problem in production? And if I do it through this particular implementation style, maybe even through an automation, I'm not going to cause an outage. What we do is in the CAB, we pre-approve certain types of changes that are associated with systems. And oftentimes those changes are defined when we roll out the application. So I'll say, okay, we're rolling out my customer ordering application. And when we roll out that application, I'm going to have some modifications that I can make without having to go through the CAB, like modifying the text on this form, adding a view, adding a search pane, these different things that you might be able to do that don't have a negative impact. That's what we call a standard change. So when you look at this, you see normal change, emergency change, standard change. Standard change is that process where we say it has no risk, it's pre-approved, it doesn't require a CAB, it can be applied at any time. This prevents your change process from being this draconian iron fist change process that kills productivity in your business. A lot of times when I run into companies that have implemented change management, that's where they're at. They've implemented change management for everything, and their people are significantly less productive because they have no standard change. Now, another type of change that fits right in between those two, fits right between normal and standard, is emergency change. Emergency change is for a company that implements that doesn't have change management. Emergency change is basically how you guys do changes today. So emergency change is, I'm going to make this change now. I have no idea what the impact is going to be, or at least I haven't planned what the impact is going to be, and it's going to happen outside of a CAB. So that change is a bad thing for me to be doing. It's something that I need to minimize, and it's something that I don't want to have as a regular reoccurring impact to my business. I know this consultant this internal IT folk, and what he's created is this idea of something called good day, bad day. So what he does is he looks at this board every day and they say, did I have a good day yesterday or did I have a bad day yesterday in IT? And if they've had an emergency change, they say, in respect to IT operations, we've had a bad day in change management if we had an emergency change. Because essentially, emergency changes are these introductions of modifications that have high risk, are occurring outside of a CAB, and are impacting our availability of our applications. So when we talk about change management, you can see how this sort of shifts our paradigm in a way which causes us to re-envision how we implement changes and how we organize those in our minds. What I would suggest if you're looking at change management in your organization is that you try to stick to these terms. And the reason why I say sticking to these terms is important is because it allows you to have a standard set of language. Some companies I've run into, they're using their own set of language. So they'll have something like minimal change, low change, or a production change. And the problem with using those terms isn't so much that they don't mean something. They do mean something. But the problem is that they mean something only to that organization. So it's difficult then to train new people on that change model, because those change components, those change terms, really only matter to that business. So what I usually counsel people around is, look, you can use those terms if there's no other option. But in most cases, you're able to accomplish what your business needs by using out-of-box, using standard ITIL terms. And by using standard ITIL terms like this, you're then able to normalize with the rest of the industry. So if you bring in someone clean off the street, or you bring in someone from another business, they're going to understand this idea of a normal or emergency or a standard change. And they're going to say, okay, I get this. This makes sense. This is how I was working with this in my other business. Or if someone's just learning it for the first time, you can put them in front of an ITIL training course like this or another ITIL training course, and they'll be able to learn those same types of terms. All right, so moving on. Here's an example of a change request. What do we have contained within it? Well, first we have a title. We have a schedule of when we're actually implementing that change request. And we also have an indication of whether or not it's going to cause an outage. I usually say that if there's a chance it's going to cause an outage, it's yes. Outage is a yes-no question. It's not a maybe question. You always want to plan again for the worst case scenario, not for the best case scenario. So if you say, well, might, you're not really setting expectations with your customers. If you say yes, then they don't even go to the site. They're not frustrated with it. They're not seeing slow performance. They're not seeing a sort of sketchy interface that's happening when you're updating it. It's providing this really clear information to your users about whether or not an outage will occur or won't occur. We have a deployment plan. Is it automated or manual? If it's manual, you're going to have to document it. Do you have a backup plan? A backup plan might be recover from backup. It might be uninstall a web config file. Whatever it is that you're building as a backup plan, that's an important thing to remember, because in order to have an appropriate change process, you need to know what you're going to do if it goes wrong. Also, you have what business service is it impacting. So when you're doing change management, I'm actually less interested in the actual server it's impacting. I'm more interested in what's the business service that's being impacted by that change. So you're going to quantify the customer ordering application as this impacted IT business service, and maybe that's also as a result of selecting a particular configuration item. All right, so let's talk a little bit about release management and its relationship to change management. Release management is really the pair to change management. It allows for us to be able to coordinate changes together to be deployed as a group. So you can see that it's very difficult to do change management as a company if you're deploying lots of changes together, if you don't have appropriate release management. If you don't have appropriate release management, you're going to have all these changes that perhaps went through the CAB review, but because they're applied against the exact same system, that you may not get the results you're looking for because you didn't get to test them together. So release management facilitates the testing of those changes as a group and allows us to be able to then deploy them together in a pattern that's been tested as well. So release management is very important, especially to companies that are doing a lot of custom application development, because their changes might include a lot of small changes that may or may not make it into a release. An example of this would be if you're a company that has a weekly release pattern, so you release a new version of your application every weekend or every couple weekends, you're going to be releasing a number of changes that may or may not make it into that release based upon the testing that is being performed against those changes together and whether or not the code was ready in the first place. So release management allows us to be able to control that deployment pattern as well as organize whether or not that deployment has downtime and how that deployment is deployed in terms of its ordering. So perhaps if I have a number of changes, those changes need to be applied in a particular order. They can't just simply be applied in and of themselves, whatever order I feel like, they probably have to be applied in a particular order. So for example, if I'm applying a service pack to a particular system, I might have to apply the update for that service pack after I deploy it. I can't apply the update until after the service pack has been deployed. So release management provides us with information about how to be successful in our change process. Typically, you're not seeing release management done in the operational space until change management is in place, because it's difficult to do release management unless you have coordinated changes. All right. So if we're talking about change release management, will Microsoft tools support us in executing on it? Well, first off, we have Microsoft Service Manager, which allows for us to facilitate the processes that exist within service transition, especially those of change and release management. But it also ties into other capabilities. So for example, if I'm performing a change process, that allows for me to be able to tie that into my Operations Manager system and take Operations Manager and put that application into maintenance mode when I'm launching that individual change and when I'm coordinating the release of those changes. Also, it lets me automate the release of those changes through tools like Orchestrator or things like SCCM. So if my change that I'm deploying is Service Pack 1 or a set of updates on a monthly basis for my workstations and for my servers, I'm going to use a release process to be able to control when those get pushed out. So for example, if I have a highly available Exchange environment, I'm probably going to be applying those patches to part of the Exchange environment and then moving to the other part of the Exchange environment after those other servers came back up. I'm not going to take down the entire environment all at once. So this facilitates me having a much more successful release because I'm organizing those patching processes in a structured order. All right, so let's talk a little bit about how these are used in a demo environment and talk through examples of change and release management. Okay, so as we look at change management inside of a demo environment, I'm going to walk through a couple different examples of how we would use this. So inside of Service Manager, you can see that I have an area called Work Items. I have lots of different types of work items that I might be working on. I have incident management and problem and release and service request, and then I have change management. Change management allows me to manage this individual process inside of its own area, and also to create views which allow me to see changes as they move through different states. So if I were to take my normal change processes and my major change processes, as well as things like emergencies and standards, this allows me to be able to see my individual steps that each change process flows through. So as I look at my major change process, this allows me to be able to see that each of these changes will go through an initialization phase, a primary owner approval phase, a CAB approval phase, a deployment, and a post-implementation review. Most change processes that include a CAB tend to look pretty similarly to this. A lot of normal change processes also look very similar to this. The reason why is because we don't want our CAB meeting to be filled up with discussions as to whether or not this individual change is appropriate. We want our CAB meeting to be more focused on the overall picture of change management in the organization and notification about whether or not those changes are appropriate for release or not. So the CAB meeting shouldn't really be an arguing place to say, this change shouldn't happen, this change should happen, because this DLL is wrong, or this EXE is wrong, or this isn't the right time to deploy. A lot of those things should be decided before you get to the CAB. And the CAB meeting should really be a discussion more about is this change being deployed at the appropriate time based upon our business cycle, or based upon this overall set of applications, or based upon what we're doing this weekend. Maybe we're pushing out all these other changes this weekend, and maybe this isn't the right time to do this change, or perhaps I haven't filled out all the information I need to be able to complete the change. Maybe you didn't put a schedule in. What I find is that when you're implementing change management, a lot of companies go from having no change management at all, and they want to implement change management, but what they're finding is that when they implement it, they're not successful because they don't give the change process any teeth. They're not giving the CAB the opportunity to be able to knock down changes which are not ready for the production deployment. So one of the things I find is that the CAB needs to be informed and the CAB needs to be empowered to be able to say that if your change is not approved by your primary owner, has a schedule, has a business service associated with it, has its implementation steps, has a backup plan, that doesn't have these elements, it's not getting past the CAB, and it's going to have to wait till next week, or it's going to have to wait till our second weekly CAB process. And that can be a really big problem for people, but that also causes them to have the right behavior in IT. And sometimes when you're implementing change management, that behavior needs to be changed. So when I look at my major change process, you can see those five different steps exist. And I have a variety of changes that I've scheduled for deployment. One of those is deploying the customer ordering application that we've talked about in some of the previous sessions. Now, when I select this customer ordering application, I can see that I've selected the configuration item of change of business service customer ordering services. And I can even open up that particular application, and I can see aspects of what I'm modifying around that application. I can add these individual CIs to my change, or I can select my entire customer ordering service itself. Microsoft allows you to be able to do both things. So if I added that individual CI instead of adding the customer ordering application, Microsoft actually has a really nice add-in that allows for me to be able to bubble it up to the business service itself. I can also see things like catalog items and take notes around the change itself. So within the context of the change, I've got a name, I've got a description of what I'm doing. I also have my planning activities of my scheduled start date, my scheduled end date. This is really important because how do I approve a change request that doesn't have a date associated with it? Now, I could also document things like my implementation plan and my risk assessment plan and my test plan and my backup plan. Backup plan is particularly useful because it facilitates the ability for me to fix it if something goes wrong. I find that if people aren't documenting that, they really aren't prepared for a bad scenario, and they're just kind of crossing their fingers and hoping everything goes well. All right, then we also have activities within the context of our plan. Now, those activities, in my case, are modeled after the stages that it flows through. So, for example, I have an initial screening step. The initial screening step is when the person who's creating that initial change request is filling out these values. So I'm sitting here putting in my scheduled date, putting in my title, putting in my description, filling out my backup plan, and so on. And then when I'm done with that, I complete this activity. And then it moves from this individual activity to the primary owner validation. The primary owner can then look at it and say, okay, does this change look appropriate? So then you'll say, okay, look, what am I trying to do here? I'm impacting this business service. Yes, I know all about this because I'm the primary owner, and I have the description, and I have the activities and the planning activities and so on. And he'll say, yes, this looks good. So he might approve, or he might complete that primary owner validation of that change request. So now we're in a position when it can move into the CAB. So the idea is that the person who knows the most about the business service is saying, yep, this looks good. If the person who knows the most about the business service is saying, no, it doesn't look good, it can go back to initial screening. So this can allow you to have that validation of the change request before it gets to the major CAB meeting. Because you might only do one or two of these a week. You're not going to be doing a CAB review meeting every day, unless you're, you know, very, very, you have very large numbers of changes and you want to have a rapid release schedule or something of that nature. So what you're going to find is that having a step like this is very useful. Then we move into the CAB review. And the function of the CAB review is then to have individuals be able to approve this particular change based upon its merits in relationship to other changes. So what you'll find yourself doing is in the CAB review, you'll actually go and bring up the list of changes that you'll be working with and then compare those changes against other changes that are happening. You'll talk about it as a group. What I recommend is that you start with your higher priority changes, your major changes that are, say, the release of a new application, and then you move on to other changes that are kind of coming through the stack that you need to be able to review. That change deployment process of looking at database update activity, the web code deployment activity, you might go into that in the change review meeting, but it's probably unlikely that you will. You'll probably be more likely to talk about that change from the standpoint of its overall impact. So you'll be asked questions like, what kind of impact is this going to have on this other change that we're doing at the exact same time? And are these things that we're going to have to stack up and put into a release? And in that case, then you can have a real structured conversation about it. What you'll find is that by having this primary owner validation and this change deployment steps in the CAB review that's organizing them, what you'll find is that that's going to make you much more careful in how you deploy changes. and it'll allow for you to be able to set your customer expectations much more intelligently and much more intentionally. We also then, in this step, have a post-implementation review. That's usually performed by either the primary owner or a business user who's going to review the application after the change has been deployed. The idea behind it is to say whether or not the change was successfully implemented. And then at the end, you're ultimately going to document whether that change was successfully implemented. Now, here's an interesting thing to talk about. Either it's successfully implemented, meaning it followed your deployment pattern as you wrote it, or it was implemented with issues. What that would essentially mean is I've implemented a change request which doesn't align with my deployment pattern that I wrote, but we were able to get through it. Now, the problem with that is that you're probably going to want to apply additional changes, and that deployment pattern error might exist in other change requests as well. That's something that we need to avoid. We can also see partially implemented. That's something you may not ever want to have, but perhaps if you're applying a service pack and that service pack incorrectly implemented on one of the servers out of 10, and we can't really back it out, maybe the backup plan is we can't back it out. We have to go back to like yesterday's full virtual machine backup. That partially implemented state might reside until the next change window. We have failed, which would be we tried to implement and it didn't work, rejected, meaning we canceled it, or we rejected it before it got to the actual implementation stage. We have canceled, which would mean that we created it, but maybe it was stopped before it got to the primary owner approval. And then unauthorized would be like maybe the person who's implementing that change is the wrong person. I find the most important ones to think about implementation results are going to be successfully implemented, implemented with issues, and failed. The reason why is because implemented with issues happens all the time in our normal deployment processes. And that tag allows us to really proactively look at our change requests and alter the way that they're implemented so we can change and improve the way that we're deploying changes in a more holistic way. We also have in our change requests related items, and also we can track each change request as a historical record as it moves through the individual history in our system. So that allows for us to be very structured in terms of how we look at our changes and manage them over time. All right, so how does this relate to the concept of a release? So in Service Manager, we also have the idea of a release, and the release facilitates us managing those multiple changes together. So inside of my release management process, you can see very similar to the change management, I've organized different views. I have release record all, canceled ones, closed ones, ones in an in-progress state, and so on. So if I were to look up my regular weekend website release, you can see that it has its own information. It has the website release itself, it has the category itself, it has the assigned to individual, it has its individual type, its impact, risk, and priority. And then it also has its release package of CIs, its schedule for deployment, and the downtime. This goes to that overall question, comment that I made, which was that it either causes downtime or it doesn't. It's not like a maybe. You need to note whether or not you believe this is going to cause downtime. I usually fare toward what's the most worst case scenario, because that way I'm providing good expectations for my customers that they will probably have an outage during this period and they won't open then an incident if they can't get to the site. It allows me to manage the deployment activities that exist within the release. So I can see I have my test release group, the approval and the deployment of the release group. And then I have the related items. So I can see I have a sub-release as well as another that change request for deploying the customer ordering application inside the context of my regular weekend website release. So this allows me to use my practices of change management inside the context of my release management process. Now, earlier today, we talked about how we have different kinds of changes. So when I go to change management, I'll kind of jump back over there from release management. I want to note that when you're opening up the change request, when you're saying create change request, I'm going to have the templates of the request already created. And then I'm going to have descriptions that are oriented around those individual requests. So when an individual is opening up a request, it allows for me to predefine the content there, and then people can pick them from a list. So for example, if they're choosing a standard change request, I could say standard change requests are pre-approved and used for low-risk pre-tested operations. And when they open that up, they're going to have a different set of activities that they're going to perform than if they had a major change. So you can see in my standard change, I only have these individual two activities. I might not even have the review activity. I may just have the application of the change itself. Whereas in the major change request, I had a much more significant number of steps that that had to flow through. So it allows me to be able to use the appropriate change request type for the deployment. You'll find also that the standard change requests probably won't be related to a release because they're not having a big impact on the system. But I'm still logging them in the tool. I'm logging them in the tool so I can indicate the work that I'm doing to support the business. What you'll find then is that if you're logging these changes, even if they're low priority changes, I can note those changes inside the context of my Gantt views and in my calendar views and subscribe to it. So for example, if I'm trying to say, show me everything that's happening in the concurrency intranet or exchange, and I want to note those inside of a view of all upcoming changes, I can do that. I can include the standard changes, I can include the normal changes, emergency changes, and so on. I could also take those change requests and I can bubble them up inside of my SharePoint enterprise announcements. So I can say, my exchange maintenance is at 10 p.m. tonight. Based upon that, my general IT user knows that they shouldn't open up a work item because I've published out my outage window back out to my self-service portal. So it allows for me to be able to bring holistically a user experience to my individuals who are accessing IT services without having to really get in their face and send a whole lot of emails about it. I can provide them a much more intuitive experience for that. All right, so now that we've walked through a short demo of change release management, let's talk about what the next steps would be for your organization. What are some practical questions that I could ask that would allow for me to bring this forward? First, do I have a change management process at all? If I do, what's the character of that change management process as it stands right now? Do I have a change management process that looks a little bit like a draconian iron fist change management process? Do I have one that's in place but has no teeth? Or do I have one that's functioning fairly well and just needs a little tweaking? Or do I not have one at all? You need to ask yourselves how changes are introduced within your organization and whether or not an appropriate change management process would help you to gain better availability of your applications and better integrity of what you're delivering to your customers. Also, ask yourself whether or not you coordinate changes together or if the changes are approved individually. Do you organize the changes in a way which ultimately improves the productivity of the deployment and improves the productivity of the end users, or are they occurring anytime you feel like it, like at lunchtime because you don't think anybody's using the application? And also, do I have enough change windows? So one of the ways that you can start by implementing change management, even without a CAB, is implementing change windows. So you could say, look, I know, guys, you're used to implementing changes whenever you feel like it. We're going to stop that now. We're going to implement changes only within our 10 to 11 p.m. change window, with the exception of pre-approved changes. That kind of modification allows for you to start to build the practices of change management even if you don't have a formalized CAB meeting. Take a look at some of these questions and think about where it might impact your business. All right, so next time, we're going to take a dig into configuration management and asset management. We'll talk about how assets and CIs are different, and we'll talk about how are services made up of those components? So when I look at a business service that I deliver to my customers, how is it made up of configuration items, and how do I use those relationships to be able to make decisions? Thank you for joining us on Microsoft Virtual Academy. I'll talk to you next time.